The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, and welcome to Positively Pro-Life Podcast. Positively Pro-Life is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation and aims to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Remu Tenney, Education Director at the Federation, and co-hosting with me is our Acting Executive Director, Maria Gallagher. Welcome, Maria.
It's great to be with you today, Remu.
It's so lovely. I'm so happy to see all the spring flowers out there right now. Like the tulips.
Yes.
They're just so beautiful. Although we have not that great of a weather today, I have to say we are coming into a pretty good season of warm weather. Now, as we start this off, I just want to start this episode off with something that's happening in our culture right now. There seems to be a shift in the movie world recently with two movies that almost seem to show some pro-life themes. Now, that is directly about the unborn baby. Now, recently released movies Dune 2 and Irina's Vow have remarkably distinct scenes that bear witness to the humanity of a child in the womb. The second installment of the major science fiction film, Dune, supposedly opens with a talking fetus character, as labeled by several media posts. Now, of course, critics are not happy about this, but it is definitely making a statement about the truth of life, that babies are alive, and it is causing some very uncomfortable reactions. Now, LA Times article read, quote, "If female autonomy was not currently under attack from so many sides, my stomach might not have clenched quite so dramatically as those undeveloped eyes and barely formed limb marked re-entrance to the sprawling tail." Now, clearly, this person missed the whole point that this is life inside the mother's womb. And this is clearly messing up the pro-abortion propaganda that is out there to see something like this in mainstream media. But no matter what the reactions are, these imageries serve as an educational tool to talk about abortions, to have these conversations. And I think pro-lifers like us who have been working to get the message of life out there can use them in order to promote the cause of life. Now, the second movie that I was, Dune is one that I haven't really watched, but the second one, I watched this particular clip. It's from Irina's Vow. And this is a story of courage and bravado in the backdrop of the genocide of the Jews during the Holocaust. Now, it's based on a true story of a Polish nurse. Her name is Irina Gut. Now, she hid Polish Jews under Hitler's invasion of Poland. Now, there is a scene in there where these hidden members, now there's a group of about 7 to 8 people. Now, these hidden members of this group are deliberating on what to do because a young woman among them is pregnant. Now, and they fear that this child is going to give away their location and jeopardize the whole group's safety. So the conclusion that they arrive at is that she should have an abortion. She should get rid of this baby. And they ask Irina, the woman who was the brainchild of hiding them and finding that spot for them. Now she's employed by the Germans, so she is able to go out and procure abortion pills. So they ask her to do that for this young woman and for the safety of the entire group. But what Irina says then is absolutely brilliant. Now, and this is something that's in the trailers, so it's not a big, I'm not giving the whole movie away, but what she says is, "I made a vow that if I ever could save a life, I would." And saying that, she refuses to get these abortion pills. Now, that child that she saved is alive today. And there is supposedly an interview at the end of that movie where he talks about how he's thankful that he was not aborted. I truly hope that we can see more of these themes, more pro-life themes in movies, so that they can inspire us to protect, defend, and guard the sanctity of life in every way. But for now, go check out these two movies and let us know what you think. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Maria for her update for the week.
Thank you so much, Remo. And I greatly appreciated the information about the movies. I think we should all check those out. And what I wanted to talk to you about today was the fact that we're going to come up on the second anniversary of the overturn of Roe versus Wade this summer. And we now have politicians who are saying that if they get into office or if they remain in office, they're going to bring back Roe versus Wade. Well, what does that really mean? A lot of people do not understand Roe versus Wade, and they never did. Roe versus Wade was a sweeping U.S. Supreme Court ruling way back in 1973, which got rid of all of the protective pro-life laws in the entire country. And it basically took the people out of the equation, the people through their elected representatives. And so we had abortion on demand for any reason or for no reason at all during all 9 months of pregnancy. And a lot of people are confused about that. They think that Roe was just about the first trimester. It wasn't. When it's read with its companion case, Doe versus Bolton, it meant the entirety of pregnancy. And so when politicians talk about going back to Roe versus Wade, that would be a step backward for our country. Because when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe with the Dobbs decision in 2022, what the court said was that there was no federal constitutional right to abortion. And if you read the Constitution, you will not find that right, that so-called right, within it. So they ruled correctly and masterfully. And they left it up to the people to decide the fate of abortion policy in the U.S. And so we have some states that have passed very protective laws for preborn children and their mothers. We have other states that have enshrined abortion, the so-called right to abortion, within their state constitutions. And then we have Pennsylvania, where the law remains the same. We have the Abortion Control Act, which has been time-tested, and it ensures that there is a 24-hour waiting period for abortion. There's informed consent. There's parental consent. And there are protections for the preborn child in the later stages of pregnancy. So we want to keep that law. So if you are like-minded, please go to our website at paprolife.org and check out our legislative alert to stop the bad pro-abortion constitutional amendment from being passed in Pennsylvania. Remmel.
Thank you, Maria, for making us aware of that. Now, I have not introduced our guest for today yet, so let me introduce her to you. We have with us Mary Schur, I think. I'm sorry if I got the name wrong. But we have with us Mary, who is the author of recently published pro-life book, Never Alone. Now, this book is about the life of Betty Caffrey, president of the Wyoming Valley chapter, Pennsylvanians for Human Life. And she has served as president for 45 years, from what I understand. And she has been, Betty Caffrey has been described as truly an icon in the pro-life movement. And we can be proud to have such a legacy so close to our cause in Pennsylvania. And here to talk with us more about Betty's life is Mary herself. Welcome, Mary, to Positively Pro-Life.
Oh, thank you very much, Raymond. Thank you so much.
And Mary, if you can just speak up a little bit, then we can hear you better. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
That's great.
Well, I'm sorry. I've recently published a book about our Betty Caffrey. And as Remmel said, she is director, founder of Pennsylvania for Human Life, the Wyoming Valley chapter. And being a native of Wyoming Valley, I have known her a little bit from a distance over the years because I am a mother of 7 children and a grandmother of 19 children. I love children. I love babies. I love my faith, and I love my Catholic faith and my Catholic church and being raised Catholic and so forth. And I have known Betty more now since I retired. I taught for 30 years at Luzerne County Community College. I was on the faculty teaching writing and literature courses. And of course, if there was any way I could get my religion in through teaching of literature, I certainly did that. And I enjoyed every minute of it. So now that I have time, I retired in 2019. I was with Betty with activities done by my church at St. Ignatius in Kingston, where I belong. And I don't know where it came from, but I said, Betty, could I write your story? And she kind of stopped and she said, yes. And then I said to myself, what did I get myself into? This woman is amazing. She's 95 years old. She is in her office every day, 5 days a week, from 10 o'clock in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. And so that's where it all started. And so a little more than a year took me to get everything together and interviewing a lot of people. It just confirms the fact that this is a woman of faith who has devoted her entire life to the protection of the unborn and the protection of women. And that is so important. So the book chronicles Betty's early life, born through the Depression era, not having much with her family, with her 3 sisters and her mom and dad. But one thing she did have a lot of, and that was love. And she had a strong faith. Her entire life is based on prayer. And in a way, I can identify that. You can imagine with 7 children, my patience has been tested and so forth. But her story is amazing because it chronicles the moment that it was the Roe versus Wade first decision that she really was not that much aware of until that first meeting at a pro-life meeting at the Mercy Hospital in Wilkes-Barre, where she was, the chapter is entitled The Awakening. She was awakened to the fact of what was being done and what abortion was truly about. And she said, and I quote, she said, it changed my life. She said, and she prayed like she always does. And she said it came to her, that's the way she worded it. It came to her that she should fight. And her fight continues to this day at 95 years old.
It's just so incredible. And what do you think is the legacy that Betty Caffrey has left for the pro-life movement in Pennsylvania?
I think she has put in a main stone, a cornerstone in the basis of the argument for life. And now that Pennsylvania is a swing state and this abortion issue is so current, I prayed for the guidance of the Holy Spirit as well as Betty did. And that's why the title is called Never Alone. She said she was always guided by the Holy Spirit and she knew she was never alone. And she isn't. And I was not, as I was guided to watch her as she progressed through this movement. She has worked not only and the word fight has to be taken in the right term. She has educated the public on what abortion truly is and what it does. And it does to women, it does to families, it does to fathers. This book chronicles her fights against politicians. She has some encounters with some clergy and colleges and people who did not quite understand in the beginning. And so she would, with her right-hand man, Christopher Kalor, a young man who was drawn in by Betty, as he said, and I was too, is the fact that whenever you contributed to something, she hand-wrote a note to you. She knew you and you got to know her personally. And that is so important in a world today where we don't really see people. We don't talk. We speak, but we don't talk. We don't understand. And that's why this message needs to get out, as not only did Betty work for the protection of the unborn and Chris with all of the volunteers over the years, and with no money, I may add. Who works for 45 years and volunteers and gets no salary? These people do. And how important is that? Is because life is hope. You don't kill the unborn human in the womb for any reason. There are some exceptions allowed. Obviously, if the state is going, if the pregnancy will affect the mother's life, but to make your life, you think you make your life more comfortable or better because you eliminate a life is false thinking. And along with this, as well as their volunteers, she is educated. She stood on the bridges in Wyoming Valley, in front of the Wyoming Valley, in Wilkes-Barre Courthouse, Luzerne County Courthouse, with signs protesting against it. I have a chapter on visual media attention. She wanted people to see what abortion really is. And with that education also came the fight for women to understand what feminism has done to the pro-life fight. The feminists in the 60s came out with the idea that, you know, motherhood is something that's drudgery being pregnant is a burden. And young girls were taught this message that to be a mother is a burden, and that you shouldn't give up your right to do what you want to do. I have a problem with that term right. There's a difference between a human right and a political right. And right now we're looking at the political right and ignoring the human aspect of it. And the feminists also warp the message for men. Men are supposed to be the protectors of women. And women are supposed to be, these young girls too, need to be affirmed in their femininity, that it is a God-given right to give birth if you give life, and to protect it. So this is what Betty and her volunteers have done, with not just taking care of the baby that's born or the unborn, but the mother as well. And as a part of this, she fought for her center. She got the brick and mortar center. Through the years, she was relocated from Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. This is where I first encountered her with I have five daughters and two sons. So my daughters were, some of them were preteen and our sodality, you know, wanted to introduce girls to this aspect of their womanhood. And I agreed. And then they were moved to, they are on Hanover Street now in Wilkes-Barre, and they provide clothing for the unborn baby that, well, they have to see the baby. There's a process they go through, and they get, for over 2 years of life, they get clothing for that child. Even for the mother when she's pregnant, if she needs clothing, they get cribs, anything that people donate, and it's all donated. And people have been so generous through the years. And they're provided the baby up to 2 years with diapers and that, and other things like formula they don't do. But Betty has references to many places to help the women. And the other thing that amazed me with it too, with writing the book, was I had introduced Betty to a book and she did read it, and it's called Under the Mantle. It's by Father Donald Calloway, who's a Marian priest. And that chapter in his, I quote some of it, as motherhood is something that the devil, and we are fighting a spiritual battle, there's no question about it in my mind. The devil wants to eradicate women for one reason, because our Lord and Savior came through a woman into this world. So the devil fights harder to destroy women. And what is destroying women? But is abortion. Abortion destroys motherhood. It destroys women. And you have to recognize that. And it's interesting that he says with the idea of motherhood, it's actually healthy for the mother. And it's interesting that the word salvation means eternal health. And how is a woman made healthy through childbirth. It's interesting that he noted that science has recently found that when a woman carries a child, the cells of that child, some of them remain in her for the rest of her life. And at times they found, it's called fetal maternal microchimerism. It's a nice big word, worse than my name. it carries with it the idea that the scientists have found, they first thought that these cells may be causing the woman sickness, when in fact they found those cells that remain were going to an area that the woman was sick and was actually helping to fight it. And so it's ironic that, well, he makes a joke of like, you think your mother's always watching you? She's over your shoulder? No, she's in your shoulder. But it's also the fact that these cells, even if a woman had an abortion or a miscarriage or had the child, if she had that abortion, that baby cell is still within her fighting for her life. And that really touched me. That surprised me with some of the things. And I mentioned it to several doctor friends that I have, and they were not aware of this as well. So Betty's fight, though, is something that has remained here as a cornerstone, because this tiny woman is 95 years old. Anybody who devotes their life to this, and she has saved thousands of women and babies. I have witnessed people that have come to the center and would thank Betty. Their son or daughter would be like in their 20s. Thank you. I could not live without them. So
it really sounds like Betty built up a village of people who can support pregnant women in crisis, mothers with young babies or children, and also just raise awareness. That all of it sounds so amazing. And I was wondering, do you remember the first time you met Betty Caffrey? How did you become so deeply acquainted with her?
Well, I was teaching, I took time off. I taught high school, but I retired to raise my class of seven. And then with the children and then getting back, I got back to teaching. And but as I said, I first met her when my daughters were preteen and early teens through our church. I met her and I would always stay in touch with her. But as I said, now that I was retired and I was fascinated, I mean, I've always been pro-life, always. I had to get to know her. And so through these series of interviews over a year and a half, 2 years now, basically, I got to know her very personally, and I love her very much for what, not only what she does, but as a human being. She's a soft-spoken counselor as well. And I might mention to women who come to the center who've had abortions and deeply regret it. And that was another thing that I found about her, is that she listens. It is so important to listen. So, you know, in a day and age where we hardly look at people because we're on phones and everything else, she listens, she sees you. And that was another part of it. She's delightful, but she's a very strong woman. She has her opinions on things. She is up on everything. She knows statistics. She reads for and against life. And she and Chris and the volunteers that are there, through the book, it is a series too of her letters to the editor, articles that were written about her fights. So that's how I got to know, I got really to know her.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, and I'm wondering, what can young advocates for life learn from Betty's example?
Well, I think what they have to learn is to be educated on a subject matter. You can't go and discuss something in a shallow manner of what's out there on the internet, what you see on TV or in whatever medium you're looking at. That is not the full story. They have to recognize. And I have, as I said, 19 grandchildren, and I have some graduating from high school this year and some are in college. These young people today are questioning, which is a good thing. They need to get to the heart of the matter. What is the real issue? What exactly is abortion, what it looks like. It's quote, graphic, realistic. Well, you live in a world that is so graphic now. Go and see what's actually done. And then what happens to the mother and the father and the family? They have to see her dedication. Who dedicates your life to something that she is extremely educated about, and they have to be as well before they go to vote or even express. And they need to be there. One more thing I want to say. We found that through this book that people who are seem to be pro-choice, which again, that upset Betty, that it should have stayed pro-abortion. I have a chapter on manipulation of language, is the fact that they have to realize that we see that people who are highly educated, have enough money, and are unchurched are the people who are pro-abortion. These are people that are not aware of what religion is, of what spirituality is. And these are the people that need to be educated. And they think that money is going to buy them everything. Well, it won't buy them into eternity in the right way if they don't understand that life is the heart of the matter, really, and needs to be fought for.
Absolutely. Life is the heart of the matter. Rimmel, do you have a closing thought for us?
Well, I was wondering if our listeners want to purchase this book, where can they go?
Okay, well, it's presently got onto the shelves of the Barnes & Noble in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I'm working to get it online there and perhaps on Amazon, but it will be on sale as well at the Heart and Heaven and Earth Bookshop in Scranton. There are books up there now, and it will be, as I said, the book signing that I'll have with Betty on May the 9th. It's Ascension Thursday, so she says they can go to church across the street to the cathedral and come down and visit the bookstore. And if anybody wants to know, email me personally, my address is there too. My email.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. The book is Never Alone, the author, Mary Shore, and it's all about the life of 95-year-old Betty Caffrey. Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all throughout the Commonwealth. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.